Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're not ready for the world outside. You keep pretending, but you just can't hide. I know I said that I'd be standing by your side, but your path's unbeaten, and it's all uphill.
And welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast with me, Gary Trust. So excited to have acclaimed actor and musician on the phone with us this morning, Anthony Head. Thank you so much, Anthony, for taking a few minutes to chat with us.
Well, thank you for asking me. It's a great privilege and an honor to talk to Bill Board.
Oh, it's an honor to have you on. And we'll talk about that because you are a Billboard charting artist. It all goes back to the 15th anniversary, which is why we're chatting. 15 years ago, November 6th, 2001, on the UPN network, Buffy the Vampire Slayer aired a landmark episode. It was the musical episode, Once More with Feeling, and the entire cast, Sarah Michelle Gellar, everybody, singing on the episode. Just a groundbreaking episode written and directed by Buffy creator Joss Whedon. So, Anthony, please take us back. Was it, I guess it wasn't an entire surprise that this episode would be happening, because Joss had the idea for a long time. You'd all sung together at his house the prior season, from what I've read. What was your reaction when you and everyone first heard that you were putting on an all-musical episode?
Well, to be honest, Joss and I discussed our relative enjoyments of musicals. I had done a few. I'd done things like Chess and Godspell and Rocky Horror and all sorts before I joined Buffy.
Right.
And on the pilot, which was this bizarre half-hour sort of presentation that was commissioned, they didn't actually think much of the show. They didn't think it would ever go anywhere or do anything. So we didn't do a full pilot. And he and I and Sarah Michelle were waiting. We were waiting at the back of the library set while they were doing the lighting set up. And we were chatting, and we started chatting about musicals, and he said that he had a huge fondness for musicals, and it turned out that he was a huge fan of Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, right.
And he later came to sort of become firm friends with him. But, and I said, oh, I love musicals, oh yeah, and then Sarah Michelle chipped in and said, yeah, I'd like musicals too. we said then, wouldn't it be fun if this show ever gets picked up and it ever goes, wouldn't it be fun to do a musical episode? And he said, yeah, that would be great. And then pretty much every season for a good 3-4 seasons, I'd say, are we going to do a musical episode this year? And he'd say, no, I don't think so. I think it's, to be honest, it's, you know, if it ever happens, it has to be organic. You can't have, otherwise it feels like it's forced.
Right.
And then we sort of, as you say, we found ourselves hanging around at his place. His wife, Kai, was away on a sabbatical. She was doing an architecture course in Japan, and he had his weekends to himself. And so he decided to have whoever in the cast wanted to come round and do Shakespeare readings. And they were incredible fun. They were amazing. And then after the Shakespeare reading, we'd have a couple of tequilas, and we'd sit around the piano, and, you know, I mean, it was sort of going through the songbooks, because he had massive amounts of songbooks there, and sort of seeing, you know, what song would you like to sing, and he'd sort of plonk away at the piano, and it was fun. And then as the sort of time wore on, suddenly there were more and more people who could sing in the room. And I think the big one was in the same session, Amber Benson suddenly came out with this extraordinarily beautiful voice.
Right.
The fact that she could, the two ends, the octave, she has completely different voices, and they are both equally beautiful. And also Martin Oxen, who was co-producer of the show, co-writer and producer, suddenly came out with this incredible voice. And that James had, you know, had a couple of occasions that picked up a guitar and jams and stuff. And so it was suddenly, you know, it wasn't just me, because he knew I could sing. He'd seen me sing at a charity event right back at the beginning.
Right.
So he knew I could sing, and he said, you know, yes, you can sing. And I think by that time, he'd already had me singing on the show anyway. To be honest, I can't remember the order of things.
Yes, but, season four, I think, you sang in an episode.
Right, yes. Yes, and so, I mean, he'd already unleashed me. But then one summer went by, and this thing came through the post. It was a CD of songs. And I literally, I don't think, I can't remember, it might have had a sort of a strange little note, you know, saying something like, now at last we have a musical or something. I can't remember, but I was confused initially, and I was thinking, who the hell is this? Because you get certain stuff through the post from fans and fan organisations and, you know, bits
right.
and pieces of music and stuff. And I thought it was that initially, and it was Joss and Kai, him doing, by and large, most of the stuff on the piano, Kai singing the female vocals and him singing the male.
Right.
And one song, I can't remember, was, I think it was Spike's song, somebody was playing the guitar. But it was just, and it was just like, and I suddenly, I think after about, and I was standing in the kitchen, and I think we'd been away or something, and it was in the post, I was just opening it, and I suddenly went, oh my God, we've got a musical. And Sarah, my partner, said, what? And I said, this, and I put it on, and it was just remarkable. Even in that sort of strange little home demo stage, you could hear the melodies were so strong,
right?
And the, you know, like the segues and the style, and it just was just a great eclectic. I was like, what can I do? What can I do?
Yeah, I think that's why it worked. I mean, you can say you're going to do a musical episode and people could sing, but it might not fully connect unless the songs are really good. And maybe that doesn't get enough credit, but those songs are really catchy. They still stand up 15 years later because, as you said, the melodies are just really strong.
They're not only catchy. They are. I mean, the genius of it is the fact that he took, and it's been much discussed, but he took a genre that generally, I mean, I remember seeing, I can't remember what it was. It was one of those cop shows, and it lasted about, and it was a cop show with song.
Oh, cop rock, I think.
Yeah,
right.
And it lasted about five episodes. I can't remember, but it didn't work.
Right.
Because when people, you know, it's that classic thing of, oh, here's a piano in the forest, now's my chance to sing. It's like when people suddenly break into vocals, it's like, well, that's weird, it just doesn't mash with reality. But what he managed to do was to take that and flip it so that basically it's people being forced to sing their thoughts when they least want to. And it was a genius idea. And the fact that he also, I mean, he broke something like four major story arcs, you know, me leaving, Tara and Willow's beginning of their breakup, the fact that Buffy was in heaven and didn't want to be there,
right.
And Spike's love, and all that stuff was, I mean, huge stuff, and he did it all in song. So, I mean, for me, it's one of, you know, I mean, people have said that it sort of, it gave rise to, you know, other shows doing musical episodes. But, I mean, people have tried before. But I think the thing that's genius about Joss is he takes something and it's, he tests himself and he tests the medium. You know, let's make a TV show and let's make a musical version of it and make it count. Let's do things that have never been done before. And so, you know, I hadn't clocked that when I first, I just was happy to sing. Just give me a song and I'll be happy. I've always thought he's underrated.
Life's a show and we all play our part. And when the music starts, we open up our hearts. It's all right if something...
I'm not sure critics ever gave it all the acclaim it deserves. Maybe the title, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, maybe people just wrote off because of the title. But I think what really connected for the show is it felt like the cast was kind of a family. You really, everyone cared about each other. Was that how it was behind the scenes? Was it a really close cast?
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? And I mean, I was struggling throughout because my family was in England.
Right.
I had two young girls growing up. My partner was basically a single parent. And we'd sort of, you know, we'd make it work. Every time I got 6 days clear, I'd be on a plane and I'd come back. But also when we'd have summer holidays and Easter holidays, we'd go out there and we'd sort of have most of the time together. And then we'd have like a week of me on set with them. And it was a huge family. I mean, it was a wonderful... wonderful environment to have your kids because everyone took care of them and loved them, and it was like, you know, I mean, the fact that we're all still friends is, you know, 25 years on is quite remarkable, really. Or 20 years, I don't know where we are, but anyway, it's you know, the fact that we all still communicate and still there's a lot of love there. Came out of the blue, bizarrely. I'd literally just turned something down that was a guaranteed 64 episode that was all about the occult, but it didn't have any humor and it took itself a bit seriously. And it was just, for me, it was, I don't know, it just felt, it didn't feel right. And then Sarah said, you know, don't worry, there's something right around the corner. And literally, Buffy sort of was about, I don't know. I remember reading the script in a Tex-Mex restaurant in Santa Monica and laughing out loud, sitting on my own, with people sort of turning around wondering what on earth I was doing. but it was it stood out for me. It was better than anything I'd read. And I remember saying to a mate on the way over to meet Joss that I really want this. I really want it. And he said, well, you'll get it then. And he was right.
Yeah, that's a great point, that there was the humor that maybe was not always a part of sci-fi. That had to be such an appeal for the show, too. I think it was for me.
Absolutely. And I think it gave way to something that we now take for granted. When the movie was made, I mean, it was taken out of Joss's hands. And at the time, you know, it was perceived that the only way that something in the horror genre would work, if you had to have humor, that it had to be slightly schlocky and a bit sort of bit campy.
Right.
And didn't, you know, his absolute sardonic, you know, he has a wonderful wit, and he has a great way of undercutting. I mean, he classically said, you know, he'd been saying that Buffy's mum Joyce was going to die for, right from the beginning of the season. And when she, you know, she basically, she had a brain tumor and then she had the operation and then she, and I said, I thought she was going to die. He said, oh, she will. And it'll be after a really funny episode And then Buffy will come in through the front door and she's dead on the sofa. And he did exactly that.
Right.
It was a brilliant episode with Tom Lenk doing interviews about Star Trek, I think. And it was very funny. And then literally she comes through the front door and there's Joyce. And he used to use humour to counterpoint the horror and the thrills and the, you know, I mean, and the some of the storylines, you know, were epic, and some of the storylines were truly heartrending. And he'd underpin that with humour so that it made it, it brought it into relief. You know, it somehow makes it that much more, it hits home that much better.
Right.
And as I say, we now take that for granted in a, as a way of storytelling in TV and in film. And it was, I can't say that it was Joss Whedon alone, but my God, he had a huge part in changing our perception.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
As far as you know, would there ever be a Buffy reunion? Has this been discussed between you or Joss?
In terms of filmically, I don't know. I mean, it's been a long sort of been subject for conjecture. I think you know, to be honest, I think you know Joss finds his release for it through comic books, because he's in season 10 of
right.
comic books. He's able to tell his story without, you know, without it being tied up with anything. But I'm fairly sure that most of us would take yes if we were asked. But it would be the, you know, the bottom line, the thing, one of the things I think that was a huge, made Buffy the success that it was, or rather made Buffy the revisited success, because I get kids coming up to me and I think they're sort of fans of other things I've done, and they say, no, it's Buffy. And it's like, what, you're too young for that? Oh, wait a minute, no. Because it keeps coming round and round and round, it keeps catching new generations,
right?
Because it's finite. It's in terms of the TV show, it's 7 seasons long, and so many shows like the X-Files, like, you know, those the big mega shows from back in the day, kind of overstretched. They just went on and on and on and on until they kind of petered out. And I think it gave Buffy a strength, because it meant that, you know, there was a finite resolution. And so, and within the framework, you had so many standout episodes. You had Once More With Feeling, you had Hush, you had The Body, you had so many episodes which are sort of landmarks in TV history. But it sort of makes it just sort of appeal to, you know. I mean, the first season's a wee bit dated. But once we went to 16 mil, and then I think we went to 35, that's right, in season 2, and it started to look much better.
Well, you brought a real complexity to the role, Anthony, of Giles. You were part father figure to Buffy, but there was always humor to it. There was a lot going on to all the characters. But I think that's part of what made the show so likable. Just for your contribution, is it was a complex character, but it was a really fun character as well.
Well, it's one of the things that Joss does very well, which is to read the actor that's playing character and develops the character accordingly. I mean, there's a guy, classically, the reason Giles started singing in the coffee bar was because I went to him, I think it was the beginning of season four, or the end of season three, whenever, and said, you know, I was feeling a little spare because as the other young characters were developing, Giles seemed to be doing less and less. And, you know, it felt weird being away from my family. What was the point if there wasn't more to Giles? And he took that as Giles's midlife crisis of feeling spare and unwanted, and turned it into Giles, you know, sort of going back to his rock and roll roots and singing in a coffee bar, which is funny, and it's clever because it means that I was invested in that story. I had real emotion there.
I wish I could say the right words to lead you through this land. Wish I could play the father and take you by the hand. Wish I could stay, but now I understand I'm standing in the way.
The song you do in Once More with Feeling, the musical episode, it's an earnest power ballad. Did you like that you got that kind of a song? Did you want something more up-tempo? Was it just Josh saying, here's the song that fits your character?
Oh, dude, as I say, all he had to say was, well, here's four notes pinned together. Can you sing that? And I'd have gone, yes. and as it happened, I mean, it's a great song. A beautiful song,
right?
There's a part of us that always wants to rock, but ultimately he recognised where, you know, Buffy and Giles's their relationship and where it was, where it had, the point it had reached, and you know the fact that I was leaving. He made that resonates in that song, and it's a beautiful song. And it's actually interesting. Before I talked to you, I was just reading some things on the internet, and somebody points out, and I don't think I'd ever thought of it, but it's one of the few songs where she's not listening to his thoughts. He's singing his thoughts, and actually, she's carrying on working out while he's singing them.
Right.
It's one of the few instances where he's not singing his thoughts out loud. It's an introvert song. And it's actually something that he needs to tell her, but he can't, which is beautiful.
And it's sort of a mini, mini music video too. She's in slow motion. It has really nice visuals to it as well.
Yeah. I mean, he played with all sorts. I mean, there's a great piece when, Tara and I, when we sing in the library, and I can't remember what the lens is called, but he used the lens so that we were both in focus. Diameter was, I can't remember what it's called, but he used lots of interesting filming techniques. He was always challenging the medium, challenging himself, challenging us to a certain extent. But it was always it was always fun when Josh got to direct, because you couldn't wait to see where it would go and what we would do. And I mean, I was a real saddo. I was watching a behind the scenes thing that they did about the filming of the music, and you see me in the studio a lot. Well, actually, I was only there briefly for the one song, but they couldn't get rid of me. I was lingering around waiting for other people just because I didn't want to leave. Because I want to be part of it. And it was fun, you know. Nobody sort of got really annoyed with me, but it's slightly sad. I've always had music there. I mean, back in the 80s, I was sort of part of a band and all that stuff. And it was sad because in the 80s, you had to be under 25.
Right.
To get a record deal, and we were all in our late 20s, verging on 30s, and sort of trying to pretend to be young. And it came to a point where, you know, somebody said, why don't you just concentrate on acting? And I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. And but I, you know, I've always loved hanging in studios and playing and being with musicians and whatever. So it's not something that I was uncomfortable with, shall we say. So therefore, that's why I was hanging out.
And for people who don't realize, your brother is Murray Head, a Billboard charting artist, top three hit in 1985, One Night in Bangkok. So music was certainly a part of your family. What was it like back then when Murray was having that big hit and just growing up in that kind of musical environment?
Oh, it was great. I think he's responsible for one of the greatest songs back in the 70s, a song called Say It Ain't So, which was actually about, I don't know what it's about, but it's a beautiful, beautiful song, and it's been sort of, it's followed him all the way through. But he's worked with some wonderful musicians, that album, Say It Ain't So, was a great album. He's had about three or four. But yeah, no, Bangkok was a great hit for him, and so was Jesus Christ Superstar. He did the original album. He played Judas, and his version of the Garden of Gethsemane is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. He's got an extraordinary voice. So yeah, and I mean, rock and roll has always been there, and he taught me a lot about. He used to have a vast collection of vinyl. Which I, you know, whenever I used to sort of hang out at his flat, I used to sort of go through various albums. He'd sort of teach me about, he'd sort of, I'd get to hear stuff that I hadn't heard before.
Did he like your performance on Buffy? Did he give it a thumbs up?
Do you know, I've never asked. I think so. I think, to be honest, because for instance, I mean, for the most part, I was away throughout most of Buffy.
Right.
And I brought it back to my kids, you know, and they were sort of, they were slightly miffed when it found its way to England, because they had this sort of special thing, because they used to get, I used to take the videos back to England and show them and suddenly it was available to all their friends. I think Murray had anything to do. You know, I mean, we sort of don't normally comment on each other's stuff that much. I mean, as I say, his music has always been there. When I did Chess, it was a couple of years after he'd done it. They asked me because they liked him. And they thought I might be similar. I don't know. I had to. When I did it, they had to drop the key because I have my voice is not as high as
right.
my brother.
Well, just so I'm not starting any rivalry between you. One Night in Bangkok went to number three on the Billboard Hot 100.
Yep.
And then when the Buffy soundtrack came out about a year later after this episode, it hit number three on our soundtracks chart. So you both have equal chart peaks. So you're equal.
Very
I haven't
good.
Started anything.
Very good. It's always good to have balance.
Well, for someone who maybe wanted to be a musician early on and then wound up in the acting lane, it sounds like you've gotten in many times to enjoy the best of both worlds with the acting and music. So that's going to be pretty rewarding. You've gotten to do both sides of your two of your main passions.
It's true. It really is true. And I mean, and I think if it had just been down to doing, you know, just doing musicals would have, you know, every now and then would have probably done it. But I've also had a chance. You know, I've done a couple of albums. And one album, in fact, Josh wrote a song for the first album I did out in LA.
Ah.
And I got recently, about a year or so, it might be 2 years now, I did an acoustic album here. And it's nice to know albeit a sort of my audience is basically, you know, ultimately fans, fan-based. So it's great having captive. That's the word I was looking for. I have a captive audience who will, I know that will, you know, listen and hopefully enjoy. They say they like listening to my voice. So it's nice to know that you've got people out there. You know, it's not just like an actor saying, "Hey, I'm going to release an album." It's like, you know, and I would hate to do an album that was just an actor singing. That would be very limited. So I like to play with, you know, for instance, the first album was electronica. It was with a, in fact, it's more eclectic than electronica. It's got various elements in it. But I did it with an electronic composer called George Serra. And fans after it said they would like to hear an acoustic album. Well, I think they meant just me and a guitar, which would be very boring after 10 tracks. So I took it as a challenge, and I mean there are elements of, there's an electric bass in there just to sort of beef up the end, you know, the bass end a little bit, and there's an electric organ, Hammond organ, and you know, but otherwise it's all acoustic instruments, and it was fun to do, you know, like tracks which are just driven by piano. I am still, you know, there is a musician in there somewhere. Not that I'm a great musician, but I like to play with a medium. It's not just something, it's not just an actor singing, hopefully, which, I, you know, sometimes it works, but for me, I would find that, limited. What's the point?
Well, this Buffy episode, I think really endures. I think the whole series does, and there's just so many reasons for that we've talked about. Joss's being at the helm of the show, the cast, and you certainly being a huge part of that, Anthony, as well. I just want to thank you for taking some time here to look back at an episode that I think people remember so fondly, and again, was groundbreaking for TV. So congratulations on how people still continue to love that episode, and congratulations on everything you've done, and really just thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.